afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, October 13th, 2014, and it is 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You're listening live with Body, Mind, Spirit Radio and Jamie Pfeiffer, writer, coach, and joyful living expert, and her wonderful show, Uplift. Jamie is here to help inspire others and help increase the joy in your life. She is eager to share her tools and techniques. So without further ado, I give you your host, Jamie.
Thank you, Courtney. Hi, everybody. It's Jamie Pfeiffer. Happy Monday. I am very grateful to be here with you today and really excited for our show. I have a very special guest on today named Carthage Buckley, and we will get to that in just a minute. But today, I just wanted to talk briefly about what the show is about, and we're going to be talking about time management and stress. And I don't know about you, but this topic is coming at the perfect time for me as I was racing to get prepared for today's show and have just been finding myself really running from one thing to the next. And as a coach myself, I know that that is often a symptom of poor time management. So I'm looking forward to learning right along with you. And without further ado, I would love to bring Carthage on the line. And just a quick introduction, Carthage Buckley is an experienced and enthusiastic learning and development professional with extensive coaching, mentoring, and motivational skills, and a proven ability to empower others, enabling them to achieve their full potential. Carthage holds a bachelor's degree from the National College of Ireland and a master's of education in the psychology of education from the University of Bristol. How cool. He has worked in training and development and coaching in numerous countries, including Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. And I learned of Carthage, I got on his email list somehow, and honestly, he's an amazing writer, and those people where you just get on their list, you get their newsletter, and every single week, it's just amazing tips and techniques, and I have just found myself really looking forward to receiving the email, so I am really grateful to have Carthage on the show. So without further ado, Carthage, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Hi, welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I'm so grateful to have you.
That was a rather wonderful introduction you gave me.
Well, thank you. If you don't mind, do you want to give a little bit more of, you know, some of the things that you do, particularly with maybe stress management or...
Well, quite simply, I think with stress management, probably the most critical point to make. I was actually in the local coffee shop a few minutes ago, and I get on very well with the owner. I've known her for a while. And when I said I was coming on your radio show to speak about stress management, she asked me the question, well, can you give me a stress management solution? And it reminded me of the most important point. Before you can solve stress, you need to find out what is actually causing the problem. And there are a wide array of problems in life that could be causing stress-related issues. So the first thing I think, if I was emphasizing stress, the first thing I do with somebody is to sit down and discuss with them to try and find where it's coming from before I attempt to make any intervention whatsoever.
Great. That's wonderful. And what do you find are there some top areas that people often cite?
There are a few, yes. Time management is certainly one. But what strangely, I suppose it surprises me, it's actually something I struggled with myself when I was younger, is assertiveness. Mm. And in particular, there seems to be a prevalence of passive-aggressive behavior in particular. I think a lot of people aren't taught how to communicate their issues. And of course, that, of course, has a huge knock-on effect on time management, too.
Yeah. Do you mean in terms of not being able to say no?
Exactly. I mean, if you turn around, if we look at it from a realistic point of view, if I was working for you and you said to me, Carthage, by 5 p.m. tomorrow, I need you to have 100 articles written for me. Well, that's not realistic. And the truth of it is, if I don't stand up and say no and open the discussion, open dialogue, not only am I doing a disservice to myself because I'm going to suffocate myself trying to achieve something which is impossible, but I'm also doing you a disservice too, because the likelihood is, if you've asked me to do it, you might actually think it's possible. And you need to be awakened to that too. You know, it's communication is essential on both sides of a relationship, and it's a great way to reduce stress and improve time management.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. All right, so do you have anything there that you want to talk about, any type of communication tools in particular or tips for
I try and keep things simple in terms of communication. And I think feedback is the most important. You know, it's an incredibly important element, because we're not responsible. If you've communicated a message to me, I can't now go back and teach you how to deliver that message correctly first time out. I have to give you feedback that helps you to understand there's an issue there. You know, if that makes sense.
Okay, can you give an
example? Well, I like what's called a constructive feedback model. It's something, to be honest, I was working in New Zealand many years ago, and it's something I came across there. And you focus on three I's. So the issue, you know, what is the issue? So the issue in the example I gave you would be, you've asked me to do something that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. You know, why it's important is because, you know, the second I is important. So we focus on why it's important. Well, it's going to cause me stress. It's going to stop me doing things I really should be doing for a goal that's unrealistic. And also, you've probably gone on and promised somebody that those 100 articles would be written when they're not going to be. And then the third I is ideas. So how can we resolve this to make sure it doesn't happen in future? And that could be something as simple as, rather than you coming in and giving me a dictate to produce 100 articles, you actually ask me when would be a realistic deadline, and you give me plenty of notice. So that's it. Does that example make sense to you?
Yes, that's wonderful. I love that.
It's a very simple way. And when I'm focusing on anything, I think simplicity is the most important. You know, if you can really boil everything down to the most simple way of doing everything. Anything you're doing, can it be done in an easier way? You know, the model I've just given you there, the constructive feedback model, very, very simple. But it also, it allows you to take responsibility for the situation. If I want to use a constructive feedback model to make you aware of the unrealistic goal you have set for me, or you've attempted to set for me anyway, it allows me to take responsibility for the situation. So I'm no longer going, it's your fault. You're asking me to do things I can't do. You're putting pressure on me. I'm now saying, well, actually, unrealistic expectations only become a real problem if I accept them.
Wow.
So
I like
if you start off, it's not a problem. If you have this thought in your head initially, well, I'm going to ask Cartage to do this, that unrealistic expectation is not a problem until I refuse to tell you that, I'm sorry, that can't be done. By taking responsibility for the feedback, I am saying, well, I'm responsible for this situation, and I'm going to open the dialogue that needs to be had here.
Right. And why do you think people have such a hard time doing that?
I think there's a number of different reasons. It can start, I mean, sometimes it starts in the home, in that your opinion is not valued at home. It can end up, when we go through our teenage years, there's peer pressure. So you're encouraged not to speak out if you have a different opinion to anybody. You know, if you disagree, you're encouraged to keep your mouth shut, or there's consequences. So psychologically, you're almost wired to be that way. Any experience you've had where you found that your opinion hasn't been valued. So maybe you were in a meeting one day, and you offered an opinion, and it was shot down in flames. And, you know, maybe not dealt with in the right way. But that can discourage you from voicing your opinion again.
I can relate to that.
And it's very common. I mean, I have to say, when I first experienced it, and it was unusual for me, because there can be different reasons. Well, like I'm a very, I should point out another reason can be physical as well. I'm quite a big man. I'm quite broad. I'm not sure if you use that American word in America.
Yes.
I'm quite
broad.
And I found that the first tip I got when I did an assertiveness course about 15 years ago was stand where you think is the right place to stand talking to somebody and then take a step back. And it's because I'm bigger than the average person.
Okay.
A lot of them tended to feel intimidated. And that set communication off in the wrong lines. And I was finding then that because maybe I got into arguments more often, I wasn't willing to have the discussion.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That's wonderful. I love that. Yeah, I know just personally, it's, you know, in my past, it was very difficult for me to say no. Or it was very difficult for me to tell, you know, employers or whoever it was, I can't do this. I would just, especially if I was giving my power away in the situation, or I can't think of what I was going to say. You know, if I thought the person was more powerful, or if it was a person in authority, it was difficult for me to say no or say, I can't do that.
I certainly understand that because I think that there's cultural elements there as well, especially, I mean, for example, people who've been brought up to religion, I was brought up in the Catholic Church here, and you're taught that because somebody is in that position that their opinion is more important than yours.
Right.
Whether, you know, it doesn't matter what they could be talking about something which they're completely uneducated to speak about, whereas you might have the background. But because they had the higher position... You know, and I think it's one of the wonderful things about a lot of modern companies is they have that, they've introduced a flatter structure.
Right.
So you don't have that hierarchy that all those old institutions had.
Absolutely.
You know,
and I think that, I apologize. I think going to that point too, what, you know, how important feedback is to get from employees and have, and family members to have, you know, everyone interacting and everyone voicing their opinions, because it is difficult to see things from that other point of view if you're not in that point of view, you know, if you're not in that space regularly. I mean, I know in my family, we've started doing family meetings, and I have, you know, my daughter's six, so we're just kind of getting started with it, but she can tell us certain things that don't work for her, or, you know, she's growing up, so she's asking, she's I think constantly, she's growing, so she's constantly pushing those limits, not in a purposeful way, but that's just part of her, you know, growth. So it's interesting to do those meetings in a proactive sense and to hear what's going well and what's not going well. And I imagine in companies, that's also very important.
Absolutely. It's inviting feedback, but if I give you a story from the I know it's spirituality and spiritual background has an interest for you, and there's a beautiful book called The Song of the Bird by the late Anthony de Mello. It's a wonderful book with a lot of fables or parables, or I'm not sure the exact word to use, but it's full of these lovely little stories that to get a pint home without making the pint. And there's one called The Job Interview, and basically candidate one goes in and he's asked, you know, what does he think is the right way to do something? And his response is, whatever way, or, is, you know, I find the best way to do it, and I analyze the situation, and I come up with the best way. And candidate two goes in, and he's asked the same question, and he replies, whatever way you want me to do it. And the idea there is that, unfortunately, when asking for feedback, an awful lot of people are asking for feedback, but they only want to hear what they want to hear. You know, if you ask your daughter for her opinion, you have to be willing to listen to whatever she says.
Absolutely.
You can.
Yeah, I understand. Yes. And, you know, I think, you're right on. And I experienced that as well with my classes. I know that at first I started asking for just feedback. And now I say, you know, what is one thing that I could improve instead of getting all this, you know, unsolicited feedback, because then you're kind of opening up this you can tend to open up just a whole can of worms that it's like, okay, I don't want to put everything out there, but it is helpful to get, you know, feedback on,
yeah,
on the one thing, you know, one or two things is really helpful.
It's it's amazing. And Stephen Covey has a great way, which is, it's very similar to that. The stop, start, continue. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
From
so
the
you're
seven
looking, it's just like you've asked there for one way you could improve things. You're saying, well, with stop, it's what did I do that I need to stop doing? You know, what needs to change there? With continue is, you know, what went well? And we should always be willing to look for good feedback too. I mean, no situation is 100% good or 100% bad. So you're saying, you know, what worked well that you'd like me to repeat? And then the start will be what, you know, what do you think I could do differently? What could I introduce to make it a little bit better?
Right.
And
wonderful.
I find that people are more inclined to give feedback if you're all. They'll give you the negative feedback if you're willing to offer them the opportunity to be positive too.
Okay.
Because if you think, if you think about it, if you ask a colleague, I'm sure you have many good friends that you ask for feedback. But it's like if you just say, "Have you any feedback for me?" They don't want to give negative feedback because they don't want you to think that they're being all negative upon you. If you say, "Well, you know, give me the good and the bad."
Right.
You know, it's like the old feedback sandwich. They're willing to drop the little bit of "you need to improve this" in. If
that's
they've also
great.
Got
I love that.
But you're doing it.
I love that.
So, you know, if you're realistic and you ask, it's a fantastic feedback. Is the quickest way you can learn from your performance.
Absolutely. Yes. I don't know if you're familiar with Toastmasters. It is an international organization. It's for public
speaking.
It is speaking.
I've never actually been, but I'm calling it because there's a tiny bit of delay in our line, so I apologize if sometimes I'm speaking across you. I don't know.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I joined Toastmasters. I joined Toastmasters like maybe 6 months ago. And one of the tenets of it's for public speaking. It's a wonderful organization. And one of the things that you, one of the tenets is, you know, you give the speech, but then you get constructive feedback. You get evaluated and you get constructive feedback. And they really have a nice model in terms of, you know, they highlight things that you did well. And then they actually tell you some things that need improvement. And then you finish up with things you did well. And if they didn't tell me the things that I needed improvement on, I would never improve, you know. So it's just been, it's been extremely helpful. And I've, it's also been really wonderful to watch the other people there speak and, you know, get their feedback and then improve. I mean, you can just see what happens, but it's done in such a nice way where it's, you know, everyone there has gone through, there's 10 speeches and you have to do them in order. So everyone that's in the program had to do the first speech, which is the icebreaker. And that's the speech about yourself. So we all know what it's like to get up there for the first time and give this icebreaker speech. And, yeah, it's just wonderful. It's a really encouraging, supportive environment for growth. So I appreciate that comment about, you know, asking for the negative. I know for me, I used to have a really hard time getting negative feedback. I would take it personally. And
well, can I ask you, or can I? I'll offer you the same model to use when looking for feedback. If you know, the stop, start, continue is fantastic if you're doing it in the likes of a form or a friend. But if you've got a situation where somebody's coming at you with what you hope is feedback, but it's sounding a bit critical, I suggest that you use the constructive feedback model again. So you say, you can say, okay, I do want to learn from what you have to say, but I need to get it in a way that allows me to learn from it. And then you work through the process again and you say, now, first of all, can we clarify the issue? And ask them to be as specific as possible. And once you have the issue, you ask them, why is it important to them? So you say, just, I need to understand why it is so important to you. So, for example, if I've let you down by not delivering on something I was supposed to deliver on, you might say to me, well, I had that promise. You told me you would deliver it, so I went back and I promised that to the management. I now look bad because you failed to deliver. You might, you know, you might say that. And then ideas for moving forward. So the three
okay.
I's again. And it's a great
wonderful.
Way of, if it's someone you're worried about that might, if you ask them for feedback, that they might deliver it in a negative way, it's a great way of using the same system that you deliver feedback with to make sure you receive it in the right form.
Okay.
You know, and if they stray off course and maybe get into name calling or labeling, you can simply say, that bit doesn't help me improve. I'm trying to learn from what you want to tell me so that I can improve and do better for you next time. So
wow.
Can we just focus on what is the issue?
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah, because that seems to happen sometimes if you're in an argument with someone. Yeah.
And I do honestly believe that in the vast majority of cases where it happens, the person who gives you the lecture rather than the feedback does not mean to lecture you. They don't
right.
mean to upset you, and they don't mean to offend you. Because I know I myself have lost. I like to think when I'm speaking to somebody like this, I speak softly and calmly. But I'm capable of, when things go wrong, losing my head for a few minutes as well. I'm not
right.
saying that matter. You know, so it's important that we understand that of people, and we give them the benefit of the doubt, and we try and turn what was an aggressive situation into a calm and peaceful situation where we can learn from it.
I love that. A win-win. Yes. Beautiful. All right. So if you don't mind, let's move into a little bit more about time management. What
no
can
problem
you
at
say
all.
About... Pardon?
I was just saying, no problem at all. We can move to time management.
Great. So I noticed something on your site that was talking about the difference between efficiency and effectiveness.
Yes, that's something I learned from Stephen Covey. I've read a lot of Stephen Covey, and I highly recommend
mm-hmm.
this. People do. People in America probably don't need my recommendation for Stephen Covey. I'm sure most
mm-hmm.
have heard. But I think it is. An old manager I had a few years back, he was always going on about efficiency. You know, and efficiency is getting more done. But the point is, if what you're doing isn't the right thing to do, it's of absolutely no value to do more of it. It's like if you're digging yourself into a hole. If you dig quicker, you're only digging yourself deeper.
Yeah.
So that's why I would always urge people to focus on effectiveness. It's not about, you know, it's not about the quantity of work you get done. First and foremost, you focus on the quality of work. Make sure you're getting the most important things done first. Now, once you're getting them done, then you can start to try and increase the efficiency.
Makes sense.
But you're far better off getting your one task done a day if it's the most important task. It's far more important to do that than to do 20 tasks which add little or no value.
Sounds very simple. Why do you think
people
have such a hard time?
I think so many people have a hard time because, in fairness, if we look back at traditional industries, it was about quantity. Everything, you know, and even if you read some of the old experts on you know, time management or work processes, those jobs were largely about quantity. You know, if we look at the primary industries, even forestry, how many trees can you get down in a day, you know, and move it on. Now, they've changed a little as well. If you see how health and safety has been increased across the world, it's no longer about how many trees can you bring down, it's about how many trees can you bring down safely, ensuring that the employees, the people who are bringing them down, are free from danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we are starting to get more of a focus. But I do think it's just the traditional industries. When the Industrial Revolution happened, of course, it started in the UK. And when that started, it was all about increasing the quantity of work. The idea was that you get more people together working on the tasks. You get more work done overall. You sell larger quantities and people become richer, basically.
Hmm.
And I just think it's taken time for... No, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it has taken time for the mindset to change. You know, I think people are slowly starting to realize that it's, you know, quality over quantity.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So can you talk about some of the symptoms of poor time management? How does somebody know if, I know for me for a long time, I wasn't managing my time well. I was doing what you were just saying, which is I thought I was doing a lot of, you know, I was doing a lot of things. And my to-do list was very full, but I still felt unfulfilled or rushed or stressed. And I think, you know, stress is often caused by poor time management. So, you know, if somebody doesn't know whether or not they're managing their time well, can you talk about some of the symptoms that could point to that?
Sure. I mean, you'll find yourself, you'll notice things. For example, poor punctuality is one thing. But then I've encountered people who over time, they always arrive 5 minutes late for everything. But because they're consistently mm-hmm. arriving at the same time, they don't actually realize they're late. I remember managing a soccer team a few years ago, and we had one young boy who, if training was at 7, he arrived at 5 past 7. If training was at 7:30, he arrived at 25 to 8. You know, he was 5 minutes late for everything, and just never felt he was late. But those people, while they might notice their poor punctuality, if they look at the way they're living their life, they'll usually notice they're rushing from one thing to another.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually a real giveaway. If you're sweating when you arrive at the meeting, you're cutting it fine on time, you know? If you never have patience for people, or you're not clear what your goals are, you procrastinate regularly. If the quality of your performance, again, if you're getting a lot of work done, but you're not getting a high quality of work done, so maybe you're regularly getting people coming back to point out corrections that are necessary, or pointing out that you didn't do something wrong or you missed something. It's the value of feedback again. Being willing to listen to feedback and on the quality of the work you're doing, it's a fine way to learn that, okay, maybe I do have a time management problem here.
Huh. Yeah, the impatience, I really appreciated that, because there are people that, and I have really changed a lot over the last 3 years, but I know before I used to have a really hard time waiting in lines. I mean, I would just get extremely impatient, and with my daughter, you know, and she was much younger. So, you know, when they're 3 years old, they don't have any concept of time, you know, or that anybody's on a schedule. So everything is, it's wonderful. What a great teacher. But I would get short with her.
I actually do think if you're having a real problem with stress, if you can get time off, spend a little time with children and watch how they live their lives. They focus on what's important to them. If they want something, they ask for it. If they don't like something, they'll tell you they don't like it. You know, there's so many wonderful examples. And, of course, most importantly, they always have a smile on their face.
Hmm.
And I think it comes back to, like, there are, I have a lot of symptoms there that I could point out about time management. I think if you look at the example of the child, and I do think children are the most wonderful example of how we should be living our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they're not working in jobs and bringing in a wage. Well, most aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much we can learn from them. I always say, if you're struggling with your time management, you probably need to look further up the ladder and where the issues lie. For example, I'd just like to give you a few steps that I think are important in everything we do in life, in
mm-hmm.
terms of, you know, certainly in terms of time management. So I think, first of all, you need a clearly defined purpose. What are you trying to achieve? So each task you do, there must be a purpose why you're doing it. Each project you're working on, what is the purpose? Your entire life, what are you trying to do with your life? So, for example, you have a fantastic radio show here. You're trying to reach people and inspire them. You have a clear purpose there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So whatever you do with the radio show, if you want to manage your time to make sure you're being effective and being productive with your radio show, everything you do for the radio show should tie into that purpose.
Right. Yes.
Have I explained that properly?
Yes, that's
and
great.
It's just a little bit of a delay again. From the purpose, you take your purpose. Your purpose, you can usually sum up the purpose of anything you're trying to do in a line or two. But it's great to have a vision then. what does that look like? It's one thing to say a few words, but if you were to achieve that purpose, what does it look like? How will you know, you know, how will you know you've completed your task or your objective, your project, if you don't actually know what the end result is supposed to look like?
Yep.
So vision is very important there. We also, goals, from your vision, to make that vision happen, you need to have clear and effective goals. With each goal, you need a plan of action. Then you take your individual actions, and something which we've discussed there, which is very, very important, and is often left out, is to review and feedback on what has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by the problem usually lies further up the line. If you take action and you realize something's gone wrong, it's really the action that's the problem. The problem is more likely to lie up at the planning stage. So, for example, you chose the wrong action in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, am I explaining this clearly?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I was actually just thinking about the visioning that you described, and I have a free visioning meditation. So if there's anyone listening that would like access to that, I just want to offer that as a free goodie, and you can email me at Jamie, J-A-I-M as in Mary, E. Oh, wait. Sorry, gave the wrong address. JP at Jamie, Jamie-P.com. I ended up shortening I got a second email address to shorten it because my last name is a little bit long. So JP at Jamie-P.com. Yeah, so if visioning is great, and I do a visioning meditation every morning, and that's what that is, and it kind of gets me in that state of, you know, what do I want to produce in this day? I know other people will write down what they want. Is there a process that you use, Carthage?
I do. I try and plan my day. Now, I'm one of those people who generally write it down, but whichever works for you, and I think that's an important point. It's good that we have slightly different ways of doing that, because it is important to emphasize that ultimately, to have a productivity system, a time management system that works for you, it must be based on your needs, your values, your ways of working. So I think visioning is fantastic. In fact, just while I think of it, if afterwards, if you can send me on a link to that visioning, and I would love to send that out to my list so that they can sign up for it themselves.
Wonderful.
I think if you have a clear plan, I do try and, at the end of every day, I try and remind myself what are the big goals that I'm trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try and, from the big goals, obviously you're trying to say, well, what are the most important tasks I can achieve on the day to bring me closer to that? And I think one to three really important tasks is enough. Now, that's not
okay,
to say you stop and complete them. So I focus on 1 to 3 most important tasks to bring me closer to my goals each day. Now, once they're done, that doesn't mean you stop. If you have more time, you work on more. But the key focus is that whatever happens, I get them tasks done.
Okay.
And then if all hell broke loose, sorry, I was just going to say, if all hell broke loose for the rest of the day and I was distracted, once I have them few done, I've had an effective day.
Okay, so do you do those 1 to 3 things first thing in the morning? Do you start on those things right away, or I know that
unless there's a time reason.
Okay. Yeah, I know that my listeners
that
sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, well, I was just going to say, like, for example, if there's a time reason, for example, obviously one of my most important things today is to do this interview with you. Now, I couldn't do that first thing in the morning. It's 6:30 in the evening here in Ireland. So it was 6 p.m. and it's starting here. I couldn't do that interview first thing this morning because for time reasons, it's been done now. So
Right. Obviously,
if that's... The second question then is, once you've decided what's the most important thing I do, for that, when in any given moment when you're choosing a task, I always say, what's the most important thing I can do now with the time and the resources available to me?
Okay.
So if at half past five this evening, I said, right, I want to do a task before this interview. If I knew the task was going to take 1 hour, I couldn't do it because the interview was starting at six. If I knew the task required me to be away from the office, I couldn't do it because I knew I needed to be here to be ready to go for the interview. So it's important, when deciding what's the most important task I can do in this moment, you have to consider the time and the resources available to you.
Right. How about distractions?
Distractions are, again, distractions is another one I'm always very careful on. You do definitely want to eliminate distractions. One of the most important things to note there is what might distract you might actually make me work better. When I worked in New Zealand, there was a chap there called Mike. I worked with Mike, did a lot of design work.
Mm-hmm.
And you never saw Mike working without his headphones on. Mike would have music on. The quality of the work he did when he was listening to music was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that. I'd have,
okay.
You know, if an important task was for me, I need silence. Generally need a bit of silence to do it. I couldn't be listening to music. So it's important that you take the time to identify. If you are getting distracted and you're finding the tasks are taking longer than they should, you know, it's good to read up other people's opinions of what might be a distraction, but the best way to do it for you is to study it and say, what am I doing during this time? And if needs be, drop something out. So if you are listening to music, take a few days not listening to the music. Are you working better without the music?
Right.
If you're not, then the music mightn't be the problem. It's probably something else.
Right.
But you must find,
okay,
you know, what is that okay?
Yeah, that's great. And I was just thinking, too, with my clients, if they're having a hard time getting things accomplished, sometimes I'll give them the task of just keeping a log of what they're doing all day long. Just for, like, 24 to 48 hours. Like, just keep a log of what you're doing, you know. And I think that's scary to some people. It isn't for me particularly because I'm really aware of what I'm doing. But I think that I had to learn, you know, I had to learn that and go through my own trials. And I think particularly with people who are just becoming, you know, maybe someone that's just started their own business or someone that's just moved into a different phase of life, like maybe they went from working a full-time job to retired, and now they're kind of just like, I was just talking to someone yesterday that was like, I'm not really doing anything all day, and I don't know, you know, I'm wasting all this time on, you know, playing games online or, you know, and I don't know why I'm doing this. So it's like looking at just keeping a log. I mean, I think that's kind of a simple way to figure out how you're spending your time.
Well, it is, and that is the first thing, yeah, absolutely. Find out how you are spending your time. And the log is, it's an excellent, and it's a really easy thing to do. And the thing with keeping the log is, I think, I don't know what way you work with it, but with me, I'd say, every 15 minutes, record what you've been doing for the previous 15 minutes. Because the problem is, if you try and record it at the end of the day, you will forget half the things you did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's got to be.
Like,
I was going to say 15 minutes, yep.
It's a bit like the food diary. You know, if somebody goes to a gym and they're looking to lose weight and they start keeping the food diary, you see the most dishonest food diaries ever if you see them. But in a lot of those cases, it's not deliberately dishonest. It's because people wait until the end of the week before going to see the trainer to fill in the food diary, and they can't remember the late night takeaway or the half bottle of wine that was sitting in the fridge, you know.
Right.
And it's not, you know, it's not deliberate, but it is an oversight.
Yes.
And
it's such a powerful tool. I mean, it's just to get awareness of where you are, you know.
And awareness is a beautiful, beautiful word, and it's such a powerful thing, and it's the great. It is probably the greatest force in change, because it's a bit like the 12 steps in any of the addictions. The first thing is to admit you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it is, once you become aware of it, you've already taken giant strides. A lot of people, unfortunately, to realize they have a problem, and then they start beating themselves up about having a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas perhaps you should celebrate that you've just realized you have that problem, because now you can do something about it.
Absolutely. I highly agree, yes. And, yeah, I know for me, like you mentioned, the weight, you know, just figuring out what you're eating. And, you know, just in terms of stress, I was looking at some statistics, and I know you said stress, you know, obviously time management isn't the cause for all stress, but it can definitely contribute to it. And I was
thinking about,
you know, I think there's a lot of people that are stressed that don't realize they're stressed, or that have time management problems and don't realize they have the time management problems. So that's why it's helpful to go through, you know, you had that, Karthich has a great article, Symptoms of Poor Time Management, that he said that he would love to give away to the listeners. So if anybody would like access to that, you can also email me at jamie-p.com. And Jamie is J-A-I-M-E. And, you know, the poor punctuality, rushing, impatience, poorly defined goals, and there's a couple other ones that I want to have him touch on. And then in terms of stress, I was looking at something yesterday, and it was talking about these are the physical symptoms associated with people that have stress: fatigue, headache, upset stomach, muscle tension, change in appetite, teeth grinding, change in sex drive, feeling dizzy, irritability or anger, feeling nervous, a lack of energy, and feeling as though you could cry. And the irritability and anger was at a 50%. And feeling nervous was 45%. Lack of energy was 45%. I mean, that's just amazing.
It is. Now, something I think is always important to emphasize is experiencing one of those things from time to time doesn't mean you're stressed. But
right.
To be aware of all the symptoms, and if you're experiencing them regularly. I mean, I would encourage any of your listeners, if you think you've got it, might have a time management problem, if you think you might have a stress problem, do some simple tests. So, for example, for the time management, keep a log of your time and see what's happening. And even if you find out at the end of it that, well, actually you don't have a problem, that's wonderful. You now know you don't have a problem. You're in a better place. If you do find you have a problem, you can now do something about it, and you can improve the situation. You're in a better place.
Right.
So by trying to raise your awareness, you just can't lose.
Absolutely.
So it's worth looking into those things. If you think you might have an issue in any area of your life, well, I think, unfortunately, in the past, it was seen as a weakness to admit that you might have an issue in some area, or to check if you had an issue in some area of your life. It's one of the greatest strengths you can have.
I fully agree. And, you know, I think the truth is, at least for me, that it's like the layers of an onion. You know, I peel one back and there's always going to be more, because there's always going to be, you know, I just want to keep on growing. And I think that that's really one of the main goals in life. So, you know, the more I can have those awarenesses and get to know myself, the better of a person I'm going to be.
Exactly. And I'm sure you're like me. I know with working in time management, that you probably, when you tell people, well, I work in time management, and they look at you as if you have perfect time management. And we don't.
Right.
You and I are always looking to grow and learn and improve our situation too.
Absolutely. I think part of the reason that I talk about the stuff that I talk about is because I didn't do it well before, and it impacted me. And now
I was just in the process of agreeing with you. No, I do think it does come a great deal from your own past experiences. And even looking at it, I'm sure you're like me in that you say, well, if I'm at 60% this year in this area of my life, if I'm at 61% next year, that's a
right.
lot better.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
1% improvements.
Yes. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So what would you say for people to do? So let's say someone goes through and they do some testing or they really relate to some of the things that we're talking about, some of these symptoms. What would be your suggestions for them? Where should they turn for improvement?
For, are we looking at time management here? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say time management, I would start off with, different people start at different places in the process. You know, different coaches like to work different ways. And it's best to find, you know, if you're working with somebody, it's best to find somebody who suits your style. But I would always say, have a clear idea of the purpose of what are you trying to achieve. Because I promise people, if you're struggling out there, if you're out there, you're struggling with time management. If you become clear on your purpose, your vision, and your goals, you'll be able to eliminate about 50% or more of the tasks that you're doing on a regular basis. Because they won't fit. They're probably things you really shouldn't be doing, or they're things you can delegate to others, or they're things you can automate. So I would say the very first step, and it touches on awareness again. So if you're aware that you have a problem, now it's time to become aware of, well, what am I trying to achieve? You know, what is the goal in this? What's the life I'm trying to live? What am I trying to get done? And then work your way through the process. The way I do it with people is clarify the purpose, get a clear vision of what that life looks like, set effective goals, create plans for the achievement of those goals, identify the actions which need to be taken, and then regular, constant review and feedback of what have you achieved, what do you need to adjust. So that's the kind of system I look for people to go into.
In terms of coaching?
That's the kind of situation. Now, some people could come to me and they could be very clear on their purpose. Mm-hmm. They could have a great vision. They might even have the goal set. So they might start at a different point, but I would always go back and check that before, a bit like a checklist. Are you clear on your purpose? Okay, tell me what your purpose is. Tell me what that means to you and so on. If they're clear on that, fine, we'll tick that off. We'll look at vision next.
Right.
Okay, if clear on the vision, we'll have you clear and effective goals. Are those goals going to help you to realize that vision? If they have, tick that off. Start looking at the plans for the achievement of the goals. And so on. And by working through that process properly, I can find where the block is. You know, where are they having the problem?
Right.
And then you address the problem. And it's back to the discussion I had with the coffee shop owner earlier. Before you can offer a solution to the problem, you have to know what the actual problem is.
Right. Yep. All right. So what about procrastination and perfectionism? Can you talk about those briefly?
Now, perfectionism is something which I struggle with a great deal. It's a real weakness for me. Perfectionism, it occurs really when you expect, you have such an expectation of your performance and really kind of an unrealistic expectation of your performance. It can put you off taking any form of action. Or it can cause you to evaluate a result very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And if I give an example of what might happen, and again, it does help be clear in your purpose. But let's say you decide to throw a dinner party for a few friends of yours next week. You want to have a bit of entertainment, enjoyment, see your friends, you know, have some lovely discussion and spend a nice evening together. Your friends come over, you have the dinner party, you get something wrong with the cooking, maybe the meat's a little overdone or something like
mm-hmm.
that. And now you've come to the conclusion that the whole dinner was terrible, everything was destroyed. I didn't get the meal right. It was a waste of an evening. Everybody hates me and so on. All because one small thing went wrong in the entire evening. Whereas if you return yourself to think, well, what was the purpose of the evening? You'll see there was so much more, you know, you were trying to achieve so much more than give people a nice meal. And you probably realize that, well, I gave them the entertainment. You know, we had a good evening with some lovely drink. Most of the food was fine. Everybody had good discussion. People were smiling, enjoying their evening. And it gives you a more realistic view of what happened. You know, you might say, well, if you were viewing it just on everything was wrong because I got one thing wrong, you'd grade yourself at 0%.
Right.
Whereas if you try to assess the whole, you know, if you look at everything you were trying to achieve and assess how things went in each area, you might end up giving yourself an 80 or 90%
mm-hmm.
grade. You know, it's just from that point of view, perfectionism is one of the most dangerous things you really can have. It affects me. How it affected me for quite a while is it led to procrastination because
mm-hmm.
if I didn't believe that I could get a perfect result of something, I wouldn't even start it.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
I forgot all about the value of the review and the feedback. You know, I forgot that once I take action, I have moved forward. Even if I've taken the wrong decision, you know, if I give the example on perfectionism, if you ask me to do something for you by Friday and I'm unsure
mm-hmm.
of the best way to do it,
mm-hmm.
as a perfectionist, I'd probably end up on Friday morning going, oh no, I've done that. You know, I haven't worked out how to do this. I may do something now. As a more realistic person who's dropped the perfectionism, I'm more likely to say, okay, I've option A, B, and C here. I think A might work. I'll go with it and see how I get on. Tomorrow, I review how I got on with A. If it's working, I keep going. If it's not, I identify what I need to change. And I work on that.
Right.
But, you know, perfectionism is a big factor in a lot of procrastination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for me it used to be an issue. And for me I was afraid to make a mistake. I was afraid to not have it be perfect because I thought that it reflected poorly on me. You know, it was almost like the things that I did, let's say if it was a paper or, you know, like you gave the example of a party, it was almost like I thought that was a reflection of my self-worth. So if it wasn't perfect, then I wasn't perfect. And if I wasn't perfect, I wasn't worthy. Does that make sense?
And I wish I had put it that succinctly. That is a wonderful way of putting it. And perfectionism is a goal. I think it's something that should be taught to children, I'd say probably around the teenage years. Perfectionism, as a goal, it's unhealthy and unobtainable.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner you get that into your head, the better you're going to be.
Because absolutely.
In that situation you've just described, if you were really honest with yourself, have you ever got anything perfect? I want to be honest, I never have.
No, and it's not possible, especially when you're doing new things. Like, you have to make mistakes because you're brand new at it. So it's like, I know in my book and my course, I actually dedicate an entire week to this because, it's one of those things that I struggled with. And then I found a different route, or I was able to change my perspective. And basically, I tried to shift my perspective to one that mistakes are great instead of mistakes are bad. Because I know if I'm making mistakes, I'm actually stepping outside of my comfort zone a lot. If I'm making a lot of mistakes, I'm doing a lot of new things, chances are good. And that's something that I value highly today, which I didn't before. So I do this whole thing in the course where I give the students an imaginary bank account, and they get to put $1,000 in every time they try something new and every time they make a mistake. And the goal is for that week to see who can rack up the most money in this imaginary bank account. So it's almost a way of rewarding people to make mistakes so that they do feel comfortable stepping outside of the comfort zone, because I feel like it's just, at least here in America, and it sounds like maybe over there too, it's just kind of hardwired into people that you're supposed to do things perfectly, and it's not realistic.
I think it goes back to the peer pressure thing again, in that as a teenager, you're taught to fit in, and making mistakes, you stand out. You know what I mean?
Mm.
If you try something and you get it wrong, now you stand out from the crowd because you made a mistake. And
mm-hmm.
as a teenager and growing up, you probably get ridiculed for those mistakes. So now not only has the mistake made you stand out, it's had a negative consequence as well. So you start to making mistakes. Whereas really, the very fact that you can spot it was a mistake, you've learned. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, too many people are doing things every day thinking they're doing them right and they're not. So if you can actually spot that it was a mistake, don't beat yourself up about it. Congratulate yourself because you're learning.
Right. Absolutely. So what are some other causes of procrastination other than perfectionism?
Another one is I try and break it into there's both the mental side of procrastination and what we're used to is the behavioural side. But one of the biggest difficulties is an awful lot of people try and explain procrastination as being laziness. But from my experience of dealing with people, very rarely is. You know, if it is laziness, then it's not procrastination. It's just being lazy. But it's usually, I find it... Sometimes it is behavioural in that people really don't know how to best manage your time.
Mm.
Some people, it is awareness, as we touched on earlier. They're not aware of the things they're doing. So it is just a matter of that. Another one is rebellion.
Mm.
I find that a lot of people, it's another passive-aggressive way of attacking people. So, you know, remember I gave you the task, earlier we talked about where you just gave me the task of having 100 articles produced by close of business. And instead of just turning around and saying, well, listen, Jamie, that's not possible, I'm thinking, she probably promised that to her boss. If I don't do it, she gets in trouble with her boss. And she also gets the message that I don't want silly orders. You know, and so I don't do it. And maybe 15 minutes before the deadline, I tell you, well, I tried, but come on, that was unrealistic.
Huh.
And now that has negative consequences for you.
Right. Wow.
But I would warn anyone trying the rebellion tactic that most people can see through it and see that the problem lies with you. You know, it's not the most intelligent tactic, but it is quite common, unfortunately, I have found.
Yeah.
But procrastination is, it's mainly, we look at it in the two elements. One of it, I think the two biggest factors, really, I think with perfectionism, we've probably hit on the biggest factor, and it's something people don't realize. You know, people who suffer with procrastination due to perfectionism, it's not laziness, and it's not that they don't care. It's probably that they care too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
you have the phrase in America, the paralysis of analysis.
Yes.
You get so caught up analyzing it, trying to find the perfect way of doing it.
Yeah.
That you actually end up taking no action, which is the worst thing you can possibly do. But I would say, in my opinion, perfectionism is probably the biggest factor, you know, and all the related fears of getting it wrong, you know, that tie in with it, and then behavioural. Procrastination usually gets treated at the behavioural level, it's not as often that it is the problem.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we're just about out of time. I know you told me that you had a free ebook that I can tell people about. And I wanted to, can you give us your website? Is it the coachingpositiveperformance.com?
coachingpositiveperformance.com/stress-free-productivity. But if somebody just goes to the website, there's a search box on the sidebar, and if you just type in stress-free productivity, it'll take them to the page.
Wonderful. And again, if you wanted a copy of my free visioning meditation, which you can listen to every morning to set up your goals and set up your day, you can email me at jp@jamie-p.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Carthage. It was wonderful.
Thanks very much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful day, and I will see you all soon.